friends, this is Christine Hoover from gracecoversme.com, and I want to welcome you to the By Faith podcast, where each week this season, I'm talking to someone who is walking forward by faith, many of them through difficult circumstances. We're asking the question, how does God meet us in our deepest, darkest pain, and how does He turn that pain into beauty? Today, my guest on the show is my very own husband, Kyle. You heard him interview me in episode 7, but now I've turned the microphone on him. Kyle and I have been married 18 years, we have 3 boys together, and we've been partners in vocational ministry since year 1 of our marriage. We started in college ministry together at a church in College Station, Texas, working with students from our own alma mater, Texas A&M. In 2008, we moved to Charlottesville, Virginia, in order to pursue God's call on our lives to plant a church. If you just did the math, you know that we are celebrating 10 years as a church this year. I've watched my husband grow into his role as a lead pastor, a preacher, and a shepherd caring for the sheep. He is gifted for what he does, and he does it well and with deep integrity. And he loves what he does, which you're going to hear about today. In our conversation, you'll hear us talk about what a pastor actually does. That's a question people often wonder about and sometimes ask, and you'll also hear what the challenges of his work are. Many of you listening are not pastors, but I want you to listen from the perspective of work. No matter who you are or whether or not you get paid, you work. You are cultivating in some way, and work is both rewarding and challenging no matter what it is. Kyle shares with us the perspective he keeps that helps him endure in work that it can at times be challenging and discouraging. I hope what he shares is helpful to you as you work by faith, believing that God is using it for His glory. So friends, here is my conversation with my husband, Kyle. Today, I get to interview my favorite person in the whole world. My husband, Kyle Hoover. Hello, Kyle.
Hello. How are you?
Why don't you, Kyle, tell us a little bit about you?
Well, my claim to fame is that I'm married to Christine Hoover.
No, that's funny because my claim to fame is that I'm married to Kyle Hoover. For people who don't know you, maybe they read my blog or, you know, they really have no idea anything about the other half of me. So, Tell us about you.
Well, I am a Jesus follower. I am a husband, a father. We moved up to Charlottesville, Virginia about 9.5 years ago to start a church. Knew next to no one, hardly anyone at all.
We knew zero people.
Okay. And a church, by God's grace, has started. So I'm thankful for that.
So now you are a pastor.
Oh, and I'm also a middle school basketball coach.
Yes. Middle school basketball coach. In all of your free time.
That's right.
Do you want to explain why you are a middle school basketball coach?
Well, I have 2 boys on the middle school basketball team. So to spend time with them, and there was a need. And so I herd cats, which is also coach middle school basketball.
I think you do a really good job, actually.
Thanks. I do what I can.
I find it very attractive watching you call out plays from the other side of the gym.
Super.
So what do you think out of all of those roles? I'm not going to ask you what your favorite role is because obviously it's being my husband.
Obviously.
Or maybe following Jesus. What do you think your sweet spot is?
I mean, I love being a mere pastor. I feel like that is what God has called me to, gifted me to. I don't want to be a mega church guy, a multi-site guy. Not that there's anything wrong with those things at all. I just enjoy being a local pastor and being an embodied pastor to people.
What do you mean by embodied?
Well, I just like to be available and around to people. And I try to make myself present in people's lives to be available and accessible and real. I really enjoy local church ministry and life.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear that you do. I think that shows in your life that you love what you do. And actually, we met when we were in college and dated for 6 months, and then we broke up for 6 months. And it was in that 6 months that we broke up that God called you to ministry. You were a journalism major doing sports broadcasting. You had networked a lot. You really had a lot of opportunity with that in Dallas. And so I would love to know, well, first of all, that's interesting because when we broke up was when God called you and we got back together 6 months later. And now suddenly you have this call in your life to go into ministry. A little bit of bait and switch there. Not really, but I knew God had called me as well into some sort of lifetime ministry. And so I want to know how you knew that that's what God was calling you to do.
I was working at a TV station and a radio station, doing, as you said, sports broadcasting work. But I also was volunteering in a youth ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go to the TV station and the radio station, and those were fine. I mean, I enjoyed those as well. But then I would love to go to volunteer with the youth group. And so I just felt like that was life-giving and joyful and passionate. And then I would go to my other jobs, and those were fine. But I just came alive and wanted to give myself full time to ministry of the gospel, ministry of the word, in that through that summer, through that time, things just really became crystallized that I needed to change directions as far as vocation, work, professionally at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a challenging decision because I feel like God had given me a lot of favor.
Yeah.
An opportunity that other people would have killed for. And so to set that aside was challenging for sure. But there's never been a moment I've questioned that or looked back with any sense of regret or what could have been. I've absolute clarity. I'm doing what God wants me to do. Mm-hmm. And there's joy and peace in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I see it in you. So I know you get asked this a lot, or people want to ask. And so I'm going to ask for everyone, for people who have no idea what a pastor does all day. What do you do all day? What does a pastor do besides preach? I mean, everybody knows they preach on Sunday morning, but what does your job entail? Can you try to describe it?
Well, on the as far as if you looked down from 30,000 feet at it, you would see that no 2 days ever looks the same.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the prophet, priest, king analogy where, the prophet is teaching, instructing God's people in his word. The king is the leading and administrating component, and then the priest is the ministering to people. And so every day will be filled with differing degrees and levels of those three things. But it never looks the same. You're always one disaster away from, your day being completely changed. Just a little while ago, I just got a text message, someone wanting some help with an affair.
Mm.
And so everything gets pushed to the side at that point in time, and you start dealing with the fallout of that. And so it's no 2 days are the same, but it's always, I'm functioning within those three realms at all throughout the day at different times.
Mm-hmm. You and I both have read the book by Zach Eswine, Sensing Jesus. He also retitled that The Imperfect Pastor.
I read both of those books.
Yes. It's a really,
I read them both.
Really good book, really good books. But he talks about what it's like to enter into other people's inconsolable things, those things that just truly can't be fixed, that you cannot take away that affair that you got a text message about today. You can enter into it and you can bring truth and you can walk alongside them in that. But I wonder what that feels like for you. Because that, I think a lot of people, when, and even me as your wife, I don't carry the burdens you carry. And I don't know what it's like to walk in your shoes. And so can you tell us what it feels like to do the work that you do?
There's a lot of times I feel like the work I do, you get a front row seat. And sometimes that's wonderful. You see God doing amazing things that are joyful and happy and everyone is glad for. And then also you get a front row seat to the train wrecks and disasters. A lot of times you just walk through the ash heaps trying to seek restoration amidst a lot of pain and suffering. So it's you experience the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. It can emotionally be with the painful things can be really difficult to handle. And then obviously the joyful things are wonderful to deal with as well.
So when you're dealing with the difficult things, how do you then come home to me and to our boys and have a normal evening? I mean, how do you practically cast those cares upon the Lord?
Well, it usually involves driving home and praying of like, these are other people's pain and the ash heap and the ruins they're going through, but this isn't my family and I have to have some separation for that. And I think at some level, whatever, if other people are walking through pain, I can rejoice that I'm not in that and not thinking I'm superior, but it's their day of pain, but it's not my family's day of pain. And I don't have to bring that home and I have to do all I can. But a lot of times it's just praying that God would help me set things aside.
Yeah.
And not bring that into my home and let that crush me. But I think it comes down to preaching the gospel to myself and having hope in him that he ultimately will fix things. And I have to believe that he doesn't always fix things the way that I would want or I would like, but he offers himself. And so I have to cling to that as I go home to him. But ultimately, he'll even fix other things that other people are walking through.
Yeah.
And not the way that we always want him to, but our hope is him.
Yeah. Well, you get a glimpse of life that a lot of people don't get. You get to see God bring restoration in some things that other people may never know happened. You get to see and hear about what people are, some of the deepest and darkest things, but also their greatest joys and how God is working. And so I think what you get is a big picture of God at work. And I would love for you to share with us what are some of the big picture truths that you're often getting to share that help, that encourage others? What are some of the truths you're routinely pointing others to, I guess, is what I'm asking.
I think what I regularly have to point people to is a durable understanding of hope. I think a lot of folks, their definition of hope is wishful thinking, that they hope things work out better. And so I always have to point people to, there is a kingdom that is coming, and it has started to come, and it is coming. And it is, hope is an absolute certainty of a coming reality. And that's what we live for. And that's what we have to have our eyes towards, that we are victors, that we are on the right side of history because of not anything that we've done, but because of the fact that God saves sinners and we've been caught up in that gospel story.
Mm-hmm.
So I always have to remind them that has to a coming kingdom that is more real and more vivid and true than this elusive, deceptive world we live in. Is that we have to have a kingdom mentality of what is to come.
Mm-hmm.
And it's built upon not wishful thinking, but a durable hope.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by wishful thinking?
Well, just hoping that things are going to get better. Things are going to get better in the here and now, and hoping this wishful thinking that of an uncertainty about what heaven will be like, what God's kingdom values and principles are. The people, when you ask them what hope is, they can't even define that word well. And it's a biblical word that is over and over said in the Bible. But also what the content of that hope is, of a rule and reign of a perfect and good transcendent God who is powerful and glorious and worthy of praise. And so those are things people lose track of and get turned around about all the time.
It seems like a major part of your job is proclaiming truth about who Jesus is and what this hope is. I've heard you talk about the definition of hope being that it is a guarantee. It's not wishful thinking. It is something that is for sure going to happen. And it seems like a lot of your job is helping people know that hope. So people who don't know Jesus, that they would know that hope, but then also reminding Christians of the hope that they already have. You're constantly pointing them to that deeper truth. But I wonder how you continue to remember it yourself. Because often pastors, it's not that you don't learn from others or receive that a reminder from others, but you're dispensing it so much that I wonder how you practice remembering those same truths for yourself.
I mean, I have to remind myself of the gospel all the time, that it's not just for my salvation, but it's for my daily living. And the gospel tells me I have more to be encouraged about than discouraged, that ultimately as a pastor, I don't rejoice in the size of my church or the good things or the bad things that happen. But Jesus tells his followers who are totally incompetent and impotent for their situation to rejoice that their names are written in the book of life. Their names are written in heaven. And that's what I have to tell myself constantly, that's where my joy comes from. That is how I rejoice, or else, man, it is you can be crushed by the difficult things, or you just get prideful about anything good that happens, that you think it comes from your awesomeness.
Yeah. And
that's foolish.
Yeah. I know that I'm close enough to know, and I am involved enough to know that this type of work that you're doing and that I'm doing alongside you, it can be really discouraging. I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges we face is exhaustion and discouragement. And so what are things that have helped you to persevere through that discouragement?
Man, I think that I love the story of David at the brook Besor, where he faced, opposition from his friends. Yeah. He'd suffered all kinds of loss, and it says that he strengthened himself in the Lord. Mm-hmm. And there, I gain a lot of strength from that. And so I apply that in the sense of I feel like I have to wake up and spend time with the Lord each morning, or else I can get overwhelmed. I'm not often discouraged from people, but I oftentimes don't get intentional encouragement. And so my encouragement comes from the Lord.
Yeah.
People in our church, I feel like, love me, care for me. But most of us are not suffering from too much encouragement.
No one is.
And so we get that from the Lord primarily. We hope it's great when it comes from people, but it's necessary that it comes from the Lord. And there is much encouragement to be had from seeking him in his word.
Yeah.
Tons of encouragement.
Yeah.
And so I think that is the primary thing. And then I think we really have to celebrate well the wins.
Yeah.
Like when a win happens, we need to not own that as ours, but be grateful to God for that. And I think whenever we're not intentional about that, we we set ourselves up to just see the things that we just get discouraged about.
Yeah, that's so true. I think that's something that you and I have learned together in church planting, that we really have to be intentional about having conversations where we count what God is doing and we say that this is a win and this is, God is up to something here. And sometimes those wins are really small. I mean, sometimes it's just a kind word that somebody said, or that there is someone who's a non-Christian at our church who's engaging truth and asking questions, or, you know, I think sometimes we're looking for big and a lot of results, and I don't know what we look for, but it's usually small, right? And the wins are small.
Yes. And I think those make life sweet.
Yeah.
You know, you can see the small things and rejoice in the ordinary days and the small little victories.
Yeah.
Do not despise the day of small things, but rejoice. Yeah. You know, and I think those are things that you can, if you can do that, you have far more to be encouraged about than discouraged.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's a lot of similarities in what you're doing as a pastor and what we all do, all of us who are Christians who are trying to do some sort of work in honor of the Lord, in the name of the Lord. Obviously, there are a lot of differences in what you're doing, but I think we all face in our work discouragement, and we wonder, is what I'm doing even, does this even matter? You know, I mean, can God really use this? I'm changing a diaper, you know, or I'm an engineer designing, I don't even know what engineers necessarily design, what road systems or, you know, I don't know.
Different things.
I'm not an engineer, but you know, everybody does work no matter if they get a paycheck for it or not. And it's so easy to think, is God even using this? Why even do this? I mean, sometimes even today, this morning, I was discouraged about writing. Why am I even doing this? God's not using this. And so I think a lot of times when I'm discouraged, you are the person who encourages me. When I say, what does this matter in the big picture of things? And is God really even using me? And I think you're really good at reminding me of just the simple truths. What are some of the things that you would say to me or to others who are just in their everyday work, they're thinking, does this even matter? How can I trust that God is going to bring fruit from this?
I think we have to start with the idea that we live in a land of tears and sweat. You know, from the very beginning of Genesis 3, God says to Adam, you'll toil and it will be by the sweat of your brow. And so there's going to be some level of monotony, difficulty for everyone. No matter what you're doing, you're going to face challenges. And so no one's going to be exempt from that. But we get to the way that we live as Christians, people saved by the gospel, is we get to cultivate that. That's why we're not home yet. That's why we're not in heaven, is that we get to be cultivators and creators just like our Father is. And so we have to see that in everything that we do, that God has us changing diapers, or he has us doing engineering work or sales, that we cultivate. And so we do that, and we know that there are going to be tears and sweat in the components of our work that are just part of life in a broken place. But I think that what we have to remind ourselves is what it talks about in Galatians with Paul. He says that you reap what you sow, and God doesn't seem as if he cares what we are doing as much as our heartbeat in what we do. And so how we do it matters more than what we're doing. And so we can work as unto the Lord, no matter what we are doing and what that looks like. And So we have the opportunity to sow well in our work. Whatever we sow, we will reap, Paul says. And so the idea of heart-level attitude transcends what we do and how we necessarily feel about it. So what we do is we have a mindset for the Lord. If we're making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, we can pray for his glory to be known for the sake of those who are eating those sandwiches. We can labor in street design for God's kingdom to come, for his will to be done, that there will be streets in heaven, and we long for the day when, you know, streets of gold, you know, the values of that kingdom reflect the kingdom of streets of asphalt. I think a lot of it comes down to just how do we stay faithful at the plow?
Yeah.
As we sow seeds for a harvest of righteousness, that's what we're really doing, more so than we are making sandwiches. And how do we see God's purposes and plans within that? And I think everything you can see purpose and meaning in almost everything on this earth. And so our eyes are always to the Lord. If nothing else, we do it while we pray and we seek him out.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate how you've encouraged me in my own cultivating of, for me, writing, and your example of how you do pastoring is, you've changed my life. Just getting to be, you know, in intimate relationship with you, I've learned so much from you about just steady, long view work. You do it well. So I'm really thankful that I get a front row seat to that. And I just have one more question as we're closing out. How are you personally thinking of you, not just as a pastor and what you tell other people, but how are you as a person walking forward by faith? What is helping you to do that?
I mean, I feel like I pray the Lord's Prayer more now than ever. And I think the repetitive idea that you're hearing from me is that there is a kingdom that is coming, and I want to be an ambassador from the future of that kingdom. And so I just am always like, I want to have a future orientation, and I want to reflect those values well, because I'm a citizen of that kingdom, and my life has been swallowed up into that kingdom, and I'm a citizen of that kingdom, and now I get to be, as a pastor and as someone who lives in this lower kingdom, an ambassador of it. And I just want to do that well, and I want to live a life that is not caught up in materialistic things, in frivolous entertainment that has less meaning. And again, there are times for that of entertainment, but I want to give my life to things that matter and then make a difference for a kingdom that's coming.
Yeah. Well, I said I had one more question, but I actually have another.
Okay.
Because you've talked about hope.
You're my wife. You can ask.
I can ask whatever I want. You've talked about hope. You've talked about the sure hope that we have. You've talked about the kingdom. You've even said something about streets of gold. And it's just, in some ways, you're painting a picture for us of heaven. Can you tell us more what you think about when you think about heaven from what you know of scripture? Paint us a picture of what we're waiting for. That's a big question, but comes to your mind when you...
I get super excited thinking and talking about heaven. You know, in some of our early marriage things that we walk through as young parents really kind of got me on a journey of exploring and thinking clearly about heaven.
Yeah.
So there's so much that I can't wait for. I can't wait to see Jesus and see what he's like. Not the, you know, the airbrushed version, but see him and nail scarred hands. So I can't wait to be around him. I can't wait to be around friends to be and fellow saints. I can't wait to be excited to meet and get to know and praise the Lord with those people. I can't wait to eat from the tree that has new fruit on it every single month. I can't wait to see the sights that John talks about in Revelation and can hardly even describe what he's seeing. I can't wait to take that in. And I just think that at that point in time, I look back at what my life now and think I was hardly alive. And so I think everything is going to have so much more vivid substance. And I think all of the best things here on earth are just appetizers of what's to come.
Yeah.
The great things I see as a pastor of redemption and restoration are just morsels of an ongoing reality to come that I long for. I long for.
I do too.
Yeah.
And I think that's what is the fuel for what you're doing and what we're doing together is that we can hear Jesus say, well done, good and faithful servant. And we can enjoy the fruit of what we've been a part of here, right?
And the certainty of that future makes not getting either what I want or working through the difficulties well. I can do that because I know what's coming. And I can labor well by faith here and now.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time.
Yeah, I love you and I'm proud of you and you're my hero.
I love you and I'm proud of you and I love being married to you. So,
All right.
And everybody probably didn't want to hear that.
And cut.
I love how Kyle talked about being a mere pastor. I'm not a pastor, but his language and the conversations we've had in our own home about being an embodied person have really challenged me to think about how God has placed me in a specific place, in specific roles, and in specific relationships, and how I'm often tempted to think of my calling outside of those things. In fact, my calling isn't as complicated as I often make it out to be. Friends, thanks so much for listening to the podcast, and thank you to those who have chosen to support my work through my Patreon page, which is linked below. If you're enjoying the podcast, would you leave a review on the podcast platform that you use, like iTunes or Spotify? That would be so helpful to me. Next week, my guest on the show is Kristen Wetherill. I chatted with her about chronic illness and how we can have hope even when our difficult circumstances don't change. Until then, friends, have a great day and keep walking forward by faith.